Welcome to the Election 2007 podcast interviews. In this podcast series, candidates in the May 2007 polls tell you what they think about the various issues and problems facing the country. No sound bites, just complete answers to pressing questions so you can make an informed choice in May.
Welcome to Inquirer.net's Election 2007 podcast. Our guest for this podcast is Representative Juan Miguel Zubili of the 3rd District of Bukidnon, who is running for Senator under the administration's Team Unity slate. Welcome, Migs. Welcome to our podcast. But before
Migs,
let me introduce myself to you first. My name is Leo Magno. I'm the executive editor of Inquirer.net, and it's great to have you here.
Thank you very much, Leo. It's nice to be here. It's my first time. I'm a little nervous because it's a different kind of format, but at least we're now talking to the youth through the internet. And if there's any group of individuals that I'd like to talk to and interact with, our members, the young members of society, members of the youth group. And it's an honor to be with you guys today.
Well, thank you for being here, Migs. So, the campaign trail started. Tell me, how was it like campaigning alongside Tito Soto and Tessie Aquino-Oleta?
Well, I'm not used to a national campaign. You can call me a virgin on this endeavor. Or, okay, a neophyte. I'll change that word for those people who might feel offended. But being a neophyte in the national campaign, it's like a whole new ball game. It's like a whole new world for me. We're used to going around the districts, you know, in your district, in your barangays. It's not as physically taxing as it is now. I just recently got my voice back. For almost a week, I had no voice. Just something new for all of us. But it's nice. It's a great experience. After all this is done, I probably can be a good tourism undersecretary because you pretty much travel all throughout the country. But working with these people, as your question stated, how is it working with people like Tessie Aquino-Oleta and Tito Soto? It's been great. I mean, that's our name. That's our slogan, Team Unity. At first, of course, we didn't like the idea. I'll be very honest with you. Nagsisinungaling po ako kung hindi ko sasabihin na medyo ayaw namin at bakit naman ganun. Tapos, syempre, pinaliwanag sa amin na ang concept ng Team Unity ay tama ng pag-aaway. Kung pwede, magsama-sama na lang tayo, iba't ibang political parties, para mapaunlad natin yung bansa. And that's what we're fighting for now. I guess we're trying to show everyone, if we can stay in one room together and actually not just have fun, but talk about issues and help each other out, which is what we're doing. Actually, we've had so many sorties already this last 2 weeks. We've been to Cebu, we've been to Davao, we've been to Pangasinan, Pampanga, proclamation rallies. We've had bonding sessions in Villa Escudero, and you had nice pictures spread out actually in the newspapers with our bonding session. I think just to give a message to the Filipino people that we're sick and tired of fighting and we just want to get together, forget the political affiliations, and work together for the betterment of the benefit of the country.
Yeah, Migs, you yourself said that the senatorial race is a totally different ballgame. You won by a landslide during your first term and also your second term as a congressman, but this is a totally different ballgame for you, the senatorial race. How do you think you'd fare considering that the surveys right now don't show you in the magic 12 or even the magic 15, and the opposition is saying that you're one of the six likely not to make it to the top 12?
Well, I think that's a challenge for all of us. And of course, I took that in consideration in last January. I only made the decision to run January 9. So we had a survey done. I think the Palace had a survey done on December. It came out late December. I was number 37 on the survey. I was on the second page. When we decided on January 9, we had the biofuels advocacy ad coming out to promote biofuels, the law, and to let everybody know that we had a law on renewable fuels. My survey improved. My survey ratings improved a little bit. I was up 11 points. I was number 26 in the survey. I was already on the front page, which is a good thing, from the second page. So I think I don't have much to lose. I have a lot to gain. I think I'd rather be where I am now than many of those guys in the opposition who are really high up in the surveys because their namesake of their relatives are already in the Senate. Actually, people think that it's the same senator running for re-election, but apparently it's the brother or the sister or the son or the nephew. There's actually one senatorial there with a very famous last name, but he walks through a crowd, nobody minds him, nobody even knows who he is until he stands up on stage and is introduced. I think that's the challenge now for us, who fought very hard to come up with reforms, electoral reforms, and fought so hard to come up with at least candidates with credentials and background to be able to win these seats in the Senate. I'd lie to you if I tell you that we thought about the awareness problem. And it was really a big problem because on the last survey where I came in number 26, my awareness was 66%. However, my conversion was not bad. I had a pretty good conversion rate. In other words, for those people who knew me, the 66%, many of them was going to vote for me. So it was just a matter of raising the awareness. And thanks to the advent of advertising, print, TV, and radio, we can bring that higher to the next level. It's just expensive. It's really expensive. And I think that's what's scaring a lot of people to run in this race. You know, I want to tell everybody, the decision for me to run was basically when I read this phrase in a book. It said, "For evil to reign, it only takes a few good men to do nothing." Let's be more politically correct. For evil to reign, it takes a few good people to do nothing. We have women who are here with us in the room, and I don't want them to throw the water bottle at me. But it's really true. And we always complain, what kind of candidates are running for a national position? We're always complaining that ganun na lang, sila na lang, wala na bang iba. So when the leaders of the administration party talked to me and raised that issue with me, and I said, well, you know what? Okay, what the heck? I'll forego my plans to have a family this year. I really wanted to have a family and make babies. I just got married because I'm sick and tired of complaining and saying that, you know, why are these people running? Most of them don't have the background for it. Most of them have credibility problems. Not that I'm saying that I'm credible, but I'm saying at least amongst many of the candidates there, I've had a clean slate in terms of credibility and morality issues. So I said, let's do it. And if the people vote me into office, it's one for the books. Here's a guy who started December of 2006, number 37 in the surveys. Slowly went up the ranks and made it in the top 12. That for me is an achievement on its own. If I make it and I'm happy, at least the system did not fail us. There is a chance for people like myself, from local government, from Congress, to actually make it into the Senate. Hi, Thea. Good afternoon.
I'm Thea Alberto of Inquirer.net. I cover Camp Krame. Yeah. For my first question, this is a very usual question, but nevertheless worth asking. Why are you running for the Senate?
First of all, before I answer that, I want to congratulate Inquirer.net. You have very lovely ladies here, huh? Very difficult for me to work here. My wife will not agree.
Well, that's on the
that's
record.
That's to soften you up, Thea. So you ask the nice question. Now, why am I going to run? As I mentioned earlier with Leo when I started the program, I remember the line, "For evil to reign, it only takes a few good people to do nothing." So we always like to complain. That's a Filipino's penchant, to complain about the economy, complain about peace and order, complain about so many things. And me as a congressman, I've been a congressman for 9 years, representative of the 3rd District of Bukidnon. And I always complain. There's always been a gridlock in the Senate. They're always fighting with the congressman. And we don't get any legislation done. Imagine, for 3 years, we've had a reenacted budget. For 3 years, we failed to pass a budget because of the Senate and House infighting. I think that also pushed me to think, well, if we can't beat them, why don't you join them? If you want more interaction between the House and the Senate, then we should have more members of the House graduate to the Senate. And therefore, we understand the dynamics of the legislative work. I mean, who better people to be able to sit in the halls of Senate, or the halls of the Senate, than the legislators themselves? Because that's really our advocacy. That's really our job. And in fairness to myself, I've come up with a lot of good bills. I think that in the last 9 years, I authored the Dangerous Drugs Law, I authored the Rent Control Act, I authored the Wildlife Conservation Act, the Renewable Fuels, which is the Biofuels Act. And there's still several measures that are pending that I want to fight for in the Senate. And hopefully, because they got stuck in the Senate. I'll give you an example. Renewable energy. We want to address the problem of global warming, the greenhouse gases that are being spread out because of pollution. And one way of doing that, we've already addressed the renewable fuel program. We must address the renewable energy program. It's stuck in the Senate. Hopefully, if I win, that's my Senate bill number one. And to push for more hydroelectric, geothermal, solar, and wind power in our country.
So sure what qualities or skills do you think that you have that makes you qualified to get a Senate seat?
Whenever I go around, even before I decided to run for Senate, and I always talk to students, usually favorite group of ka-interaction ko na grupo ito mga estudyante. Dahil ang gaganda ng mga tanong nila eh. I always tell them na pagdating sa halalan, it is only us to blame, really, if we fail to elect good leaders. So I always tell them, look at the, yung good intentions alone is not enough. Good intentions alone is definitely not enough for a leader. What you need is credentials and credibility. So okay, you have good intentions, you want to help, fine. Then you have the credentials. You've had the background. You were a legislator, you were a mayor, you were a governor, you were a secretary, and you've done all this work for your advocacies. That's the second thing we look for. The third would be the credibility. Have you been following your principles from the very beginning? My father, and this is such a cliche, you know, the way they say it, my father always taught me, which is really true. Before I got into politics, my father always told me that Migs, you must stick with your principles. You can't go wishy-washy on issues. You can't fence it. And definitely, you can't ride on two bangkas. Namamangka sa dalawang ilog, nakasakay sa dalawang bangka. Or else, sira ka sa mata ng tao at sira ka sa politiko. That's why even amongst our friends in Congress and in local government, alam namin kung sinong matapat na tao na may paninindigan. At kilala din namin yung kung saan malakas ang hangin, nandun sila. And we're conscious of that. We're conscious of that. If there are issues that we need to fight for, we know if we can trust this guy, or we know if we don't, we can't trust this guy. So, credibility is very important. So if you have the credibility, credentials, and good intentions, I think all three put together would make a good leader.
Okay. So, if elected, how will you define your term?
Oh, if elected, I'm going to push for my three most important programs. It's we call it KKK, Kabataan, Kaunlaran, at Kalikasan. We're going to focus on issues on the youth, SK reform agenda. We're going to focus on, I'm pushing for a PhilHealth program for all elementary and high school government-sponsored students. In other words, if they're in national high schools or they're in central elementary schools or barangay elementary schools, they have to be given mandatory by government PhilHealth program, part of the PhilHealth program. That way, the parents don't have to worry how they can take care of their children. Their children are sponsored, they have insurance by the state, which, by the way, is being done in many countries, many European countries. And that's what I'm going to be pushing for. I'm the author of the NSTP law. It's the National Service Training Program, wherein we demilitarized the universities. Before, it was mandatory, yung ROTC. And I went through 2 years, Thea, of marching under the sun. Lumabas na lang yung freckles ko. Hindi ako nangiitim eh. Namumula ako, tapos lumalabas yung freckles ko. So, anong nangyari dyan? There was a lot of sunburn and a lot of wasted Saturday mornings. So, nothing happened after 2 years. So, I authored, many of the congressmen decided, especially when this gentleman from UST passed away because of hazing. It was an ROTC hazing case. We decided to demilitarize the universities and colleges and come up with another option for the students. If they want to go cadet training, fine, they can still do it. There's still a cadet program in schools. But if they want to go civic works, community works, they can plant trees, they can join Red Cross Youth, they can clean the streets of their town, etc., etc. That is the NSTP program, National Service Training Program. Very proud of that. And we want to continue with that for the youth, for the youth agenda. And for the, of course, for the environment, that's my number one advocacy. I'm an environmentalist. We push for the biofuels program, not just to help the farmers, because I'm also a UPLB graduate, which makes me an agribusiness. I'm an agriculturist, which in one stroke of the pen, which is basically the biofuels law, we help the farmers, we help put industry in the countryside, we put in ethanol plants and biodiesel plants all over the country. We're going to provide labor to a lot of, to thousands of Filipinos who will be working in these plants. And at the same time, we clean the air. Because 30% of car, if you add 10% ethanol into your gasoline now, it brings down the carbon monoxide. This is tested. This is a United Nations study and a study by many environmental groups. You bring down 30% of the carbon monoxide emitted by cars. That's how green this fuel is. So we're replacing carbon fuels or fossil fuels with what you call this alcohol, which is green gas coming from sweet sorghum, cassava, sugarcane, etc., etc. So, yes, I'm actually using. Can we plug the company? There's a company that uses. We should charge them. But there's a company now that uses 10% ethanol blend, and I always load up with a 10% ethanol blend. As a matter of fact, the car that I'm using now has a big sign on the side. If you pick me up, if you see it downstairs, it says ethanol driven car, and it says environment, employment, and the economy. So we're now going to push. We've approved that. It's now a law, and I'm proud to say that the CN has adopted our bill as a bill to be followed in Malaysia and Indonesia. And so proud of that. And right now we're going to push for the renewable energy program. As I said, we have to push for new wind technology, solar power, geothermal, and hydro. I want the Philippines to be number one in renewable energy programs. Right now we're number three, believe it or not. We're number three next to Sweden and the Netherlands. So not so bad. The Philippines isn't so bad, but I want us to be number one. I want 80% of our power to be fueled by renewable energy. Para wala na tayong carbon emissions. We should close Panglao. You know those pagbilao, ano ben, yung Mirant coal fire plants. We should close all those coal fire plants, because if you watch the Al Gore movie, Inconvenient Truth, the number one polluter or greenhouse gas emissions are with from fossil fuels, such as coal and gasoline and diesel. So we have to cut our emissions drastically. If you want our generation and the next generation, our kids, Thea, do you have kids?
Not yet.
Are you not yet married? Okay. It's a good thing to be married. But don't worry, you're still young. But really, you want our kids to be able to see the sunlight, and you want our kids to live on dry ground. If we don't melt all our ice caps in the next 30 years, then we're lucky. But we have to do something now.
That's great, sir. But thank I you. Have one last question.
Sure.
Something
sorry,
like,
my answers are kilometric.
No, it's okay, sir.
I'm just ganado. I like this group. Good group.
Something light, sir. You know, the gay, lesbian, and bisexual population is growing.
Yes.
And it's magical.
Yes.
As you see it. And once elected, would you push for laws that would guarantee equal rights, or would you push for laws that would approve same-sex marriages?
Well, maybe not on the same-sex marriages, but I'd go for the approval of laws for the discrimination against the discrimination of gays, lesbians, and what did I call them? Bisexuals. Yeah, basically the third force. If you think about it, the alternative group of our friends. I have a lot of gay friends. I have a lot of lesbian friends, and I respect them. I love them. They're good friends of mine. There should not be any discrimination on the sex, color, creed, ideology of an individual. So I will push for laws that should not discriminate all these people. Then you definitely have my vote on that. I know it's kind of controversial. I know I'm being supported by a lot of religious groups, but you know, it's the 21st century. It's there. Let's not shun them away like they're leper patients. Even leprosy now is a cure. I mean, we have to come up with a more open mindset. And I guess that's the nice thing about being young. A lot of the younger candidates, that's how they feel. It's a free world. As long as you're not hurting anyone and you're following the laws of the land, then you're free to walk upon everybody else as equal.
That's
thank you, Thea.
Sir, good afternoon. I'm Alex Villafania, covering IT for Enquirer.net. For my first question, sir, it's not related to IT, but it's related to education. Sir, everyone knows that
currently the education system in the Philippines is one of the lowest. If you're voted a senator, would you have any programs that would include improving the educational system?
You know, Alex, I'm so happy you asked that. My last three terms as congressman in the province of Bukidnon, you know, Bukidnon is a far-flung province. It's actually landlocked. It's many of the barangays sometimes are unreachable by cars. And these barangays, many of my barangays have national high schools. And believe it or not, this day and age of computer technology, they have no computers in these high schools. So one of the things that I'm going to prioritize, either we can discuss it among the senators as a budgetary allocation for the DepEd, or to make it, to file a bill making it mandatory that every national high school all over the country must have computer classes. Believe it or not, they're asked to draw computers on the blackboard. They draw a computer on the blackboard and they draw the keyboard and they say, this is the computer, this is the keyboard, that's the monitor. And it's really sad. So we are trying to, and it's perfect because you're representing IT in the Enquirer.net. We're trying to make sure, and I'd like to push for that program, wherein by 2010, if it's possible, to make sure that there's a budgetary allocation for computerization in all our national high schools. Right now, what's happening is it's either the pork barrel of the congressman that's being used, it's the local government units that are being asked for these computers, or people donating from abroad, good foundations, chambers of commerce and stuff like that, or the DTI. The DTI has a program which gives out computers, but it's just, for example, in my district, I have 23 high schools or 24 high schools. They only give one high school per year. So it's going to take 24 years for all my high schools to have a computer program. By that time, obsolete na yung binigay nila no first year. So they always complain. Whenever we have budget hearings in the House, the DepEd always says, no, you know, we can't do it because they want to put it on teacher allocations. They want to put it to classroom buildings. But what's important is we're completely forgetting the primary education of the students. Okay, we have classrooms and we have teachers. But they teach A, B, C, D, abacada, the alphabet, and they teach basic stuff. We don't graduate our high schools to be competent enough for the real world or to be competent enough or competitive enough for IT technology. So that is one of my number one agenda for the youth and for education. It's simple. It doesn't actually need any more laws. We actually don't need any more laws, if you ask me. What we need is implementation of what we already have and the proper, efficient utilization of funds that we are earning. Next year, we have a balanced budget, as they say. So they say. It's going to be the first time we're going to have a balanced budget since the 90s. And this is a balanced budget, gentlemen, that is not because we sold property. This is a balanced budget because of fiscal reforms that we've incorporated. So now, maybe there's no excuse for us to say, we can't computerize our countryside and our national high schools. And that's what I'm going to push for. Very simple, but I think very effective. And of course, earlier I mentioned to Thea, one of our programs is to come up with an insurance policy or field health programs for the youth. Many times, parents have a problem. You know, when you're a farmer, you have 2 hectares of land. Your son gets sick. He has dengue, or he has typhoid, or he gets schistosomiasis because he lives so far away in the provinces, or he gets bit by a dog. For example, if he gets bit by a dog and the dog has rabies, he has to spend 5,000 pesos for Verorub. This is called Verorub injections. And that has to be given twice in the stomach of the patient. So that's 10,000 pesos. I've had crying parents go up to us in the politician's house asking for that. And they have no insurance, completely no insurance. Unless, unlike Bukidnon has a huge field health program, almost 80% of the population. But imagine if they don't have field health insurance, they don't have insurance whatsoever. They have to sell their carabao, which is their only means of livelihood to help run their farm, to be able to buy the Verorub vaccine. So what we want to do is take that big thorn out of their backs. We want to make sure that we come up with a program wherein their health is covered, their health problems of the children are covered, so that they can work on productivity. So they can just think of how much more income can I make from the farm, how much more crops can I harvest, and how I'm going to feed my family. And the problem of medication, hospitalization, is taken out of their their minds all together. I think that will increase their productivity. So I'm trying to come up with a program like that. We're in, you know, it's being done all over the world, actually in European countries, in many countries where they're social in nature, socialized in nature. Even Australia has that policy, wherein the students have an insurance policy. They're they're students of the state. As a matter of fact, they're criticizing us for our food for school program. But if you go in the United States, all the children of state grade schools and high schools get their food for free. Libre yung pagkain niyan. Lunch, yung lunch tsaka yung merienda, yung sa canteen, ano ba yung recess, libre yan lahat. They just get it from the trolleys and they get it bring the trays into the table and they eat all they want. So, it's being done elsewhere and that's what I'd like to push for. Health programs for the youth that are state-funded and under state-educated schools. At the same time, a computerization program, but I'm giving myself 3 years to do this. We should come up with a time frame where we computerize the whole national high school system of the country within a period of 3 years. That's what I'm pushing for.
Sir, moving forward, a lot of graduates from even the top schools, top universities in the Philippines are ending up working as call center agents. So that's basically the biggest employer in the Philippines right now. The problem is most call centers don't require their students or their employees to be graduates of schools. So parents or even students are have this option of not taking up college and they end up working as call centers. Do you think that's a problem? And if so, how would you want students to pursue college and pursue a degree other than, you know, being a call center agent?
The best thing that we can do for them is to come up with better opportunities for them. I mean, we can't blame them. A lot of students who speak English well or who can relatively train in English very well go into the call center business because of the income that they make. I mean, many of them are 18, 19, 20-year-old students and all of a sudden they're offered 20,000 pesos a month for them in Bacolod, in Cebu, in Iloilo. That's a big amount of money. So they take it. But I think what's the most important thing is to explain to them that you can't be a call center agent for 40 years. I mean, eventually you're going to get married and you're going to have to increase your salary. You're going to have to find an alternative career. And if you don't graduate from college, it makes things difficult. I think what's important is we come up with more opportunities. Again, going back to one of the bills that I authored into law was the Biofuels Act. The Biofuels Act is a catalyst for many things, for many industries to grow, not just the agriculture industry. It's also a catalyst for example, 20, right now on the Board of Investments, there's about 15 to 16 companies applying for pioneering status for bioethanol plants all over the country and about 6 biodiesel plants to be placed in Quezon province, in areas where there's a lot of copra. Bicol, in Region 8, in Tacloban, and etc., etc. So these are now opportunities for college students who are in engineering, college students who are in economics or accountants, who are skilled in mechanical, electrical engineering, can apply for. And I think this is an opportunity for them not to go abroad. I'm actually going to be coming out with a commercial very soon, and we're actually interviewing a real live engineer who, because of the biofuels law, they're constructing in San Carlos, Negros Occidental, now an ethanol plant. He's not anymore going abroad. He was hired by the plant to be their engineer and will stay as a resident engineer. So these are things that we can do as a legislator. We can come up with laws that will encourage more opportunities like that to take place. And for example, if I push through with the renewable energy bill, there are several companies that want to come in, but it's just so expensive in terms of bringing in their equipment, in terms of importing their plants and the equipment needed to build the plants, to come up with wind farms, to come up with solar farms, solar power farms, geothermal, hydroelectric. And once all these things come into place, you have to hire hundreds, even thousands of people to construct these plants, to run these big megaliths. So I think it's a matter now of us coming up with the opportunities. I don't think, no matter how many times we'll harp and scream and come out with press releases and TV saying that you have to finish school because you can get better jobs. But if we don't give them the opportunities for these better jobs, they're just going to take the easiest way out, which is either to go abroad or to work in a call center, etc., etc. So I think the call center, not to get them pissed off at me, but I think the call center is a good venue to start. They start their income generation there. They earn enough money probably to go back to school, or they earn enough money to live on their own, to leave their parents. And I think from there, they should take the opportunity and to study further and look at their career path for the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Selección 2007 Podcast Interviews.
Podcast Interviews.
Good afternoon, Migs. How are you feeling?
Pero no hay mayang hapon, no eh.
May hapon. Anyway, siguro, I'm sure you're aware that millions of our kababayans are now abroad, either living there or working there. But now, more of them are able to vote. So, why should they vote for Migs Zubiri?
Well, I think people more and more are looking for alternative candidates. I'm coming in from the cold. With all I have with me is my credentials as a 9-year member of Congress, with a number of bills that we authored into law, and bills that have of national significance. This is not just changing the roads, the names of the roads, putting secondary national highways or national high schools. These are, if I may be allowed to enumerate, like, I think the best bills that I've authored were the Wildlife Conservation Act, which shows that my advocacy is really in the environment. Wildlife Conservation Act, the Solid Waste Management Act. We also have the I offered the total log ban bill, but unfortunately a lot of lobby groups have been killing it in all the congresses, and we're trying to push for it again, hopefully next time in the Senate. I'm also the author of the Dangerous Drugs Law, which put teeth into the fight against crime on drugs. I'm also the author of the Biofuels Renewable Fuels Program, or Renewable Fuels Act. I'm the author of the Renewable Energy Act, which is stuck in the Senate. Hopefully we can get it moving when I get elected. I'm also the author of the National Service Training Program, which makes ROTC optional. I also am the author of the AFP Rate Base Increase Act, which basically doubled the income of it standardized the income of the soldiers. When all the government employees standardized their incomes, naiwan yung AFP, because the AFP was a separate, it was not integrated to the government system. It was a separate group on its own. And they were getting half the salary of the police and half the salary of government employees. So with my law, we standardized it. And I'm very happy about that. And several others. The Rent Control Act, which helps a lot of our renters, 7,500 and below. So if you're renting a house at 5,000 pesos, under the Rent Control Act, they cannot be increased by more than 10% per annum. That's the law. So they can only be increased by 500 pesos if you're renting at 5,000. So I want to continue this. If there is anything that I do well, I think it's legislation. Humility aside, can I mention the newspaper? Philippine Star, your competitor, has mentioned me as the most prolific legislator of the 13th Congress. It is on record. I have the most number of bills filed and enacted into law. That is my passion. I'm a passionate guy. I think that is also my weakness. Because I'm a passionate guy, I end up getting picon with the senators, and I get picon with my colleagues. But that is the style of legislation that I'd like to bring to the Senate. I'm a worker. I would rather be known as a grand legislator than a grandstander. I know it turns off a lot of people. There's a lot of people there that are abrasive. They want me to fight. You know, Migs, Subiri, the Spice Boy. Pero nawala na yung anghang. Ano nangyari? But, you know, when you're trying to help build the nation, it's not just enough to be screaming your head out and insulting everybody. You have to sit down and come up with alternatives. And that's what I think I've done in the last 9 years, is to come up with laws that can actually help a lot of our Filipinos.
So I'm sure you're aware that, well, aside of course from the fact that most of Ws have voted with their feet because of poverty, but right now a lot of our best and brightest are leaving too. Have you any legislation planned to like probably minimize or reverse the brain drain?
As I mentioned, I also, being the author of the biofuels law, that is to come up with more opportunities for those people who want to go abroad to actually stay here. Many of those, for example, many of the maids that go, or domestic helpers that go to Hong Kong, to Singapore, to Malaysia, and other places around the world, are actually coming from poor farming families. They come from agricultural areas. And the reason why they're sent abroad is because the farmer, the father, does not have sufficient income to be able to make their family survive. Now with the biofuels program, and I'm just citing this one program, we have come now with an alternative market for example, for sugar farmers, for coconut farmers, for jatropha farmers, for cassava farmers, wherein before, their market was, for example, in sugarcane, it's the sugar mill. Now, you know, the trends in sugar production and the prices, it's so volatile. There are years because people don't want to drink Coca-Cola and they don't want to eat ice cream kasi ma-diabetes sila, balik sila sa yung sugar sweeteners. Bagsak yung presyo. So, pag bagsak ng presyo, nararamdaman ng mga magsasakayan and then they lose a lot of money. They can't pay their crop loan. Pordoy sila. They lose out. So, what we did was we came up with an alternative market for them. The alternative market was really fuel market. We're now going to make them the oil producers of the Philippines. We don't have oil. My byline is always, if we can't drill for oil, let's plant it in the soil. And so, if we can come up with a better way of life for the farmers, for these rural communities, then we'll have less people going abroad. I think, you know, alam mo naman yan, Nonoy, you know Nonoy, that you're from Negros. And we all know, when you put up a plant in a certain locality, there's an increased income for the locality. There is an increase in livelihood for everyone around the plant. Because not only do you hire people to run the plant and to build the plant, but then you have the residuals on the sides. You have people that complement each other. They have the karaoke bars. You have the cafeterias and the carenderias for the trucking, for the truckers to park their cars. And so it's a number of business opportunities that can happen and sprout out and mushroom from this renewable fuels plant. And you have people now not going abroad, engineers, mechanics, electricians, who are now working in their localities, because it will be, and the beauty of this is it's not going to be built in the cities. It will be built in the far-flung areas where these crops are found. So I will continue to write laws that will come up with opportunities for our Filipinos. And I'm also happy to announce that I'm one of the principal authors of the absentee voting law and the dual citizenship law. So I'm very proud of that, because a lot of our American listeners, you have American listeners now, that's what they were actually fighting for, the right to get back their citizenship without losing their American citizenship. Now they can come home to the Philippines and buy their home to live in, their retirement home. And that's become a boom in the real estate business. As a matter of fact, that's one of my wife's, she's into medium cost housing. She builds a medium cost house and then sells it to OFWs who are coming back, or Americans that are coming back. So it's something that we can continue to do, coming up with legislation like the dual citizenship law, the biofuels law, and all the other kinds of Republic Acts that can entice people to come home and reinvest and entice people to stay home and not leave.
Shifting to another topic, last year, two of the most heated debates were over the VFA and the anti-terror bill, especially the Subic rape case and all the killings right now. So what's your take on this? What is your priority? National sovereignty or international commitments, human rights or security?
You know, if you look into your archives, on my first term in 1998 as a spice boy, I've already hit on the issue of VFA. I actually have a book on the Z files, and it's there, all my articles and all my statements in my first ever term. I was 29 at the time. I've always said this in the past, that the VFA is actually disadvantageous to the Filipino people. I wasn't for the scrapping of the VFA. I was for the renegotiations of the VFA. The thing was, it's not in our power to do so as congressmen. This the ratification of treaties is done in the Senate. And so the blame should really fall squarely on the senators on why they came out with provisions such as this. We don't have control over criminals who do offenses in our country. It's the control is with the Americans, no? They should review that. I don't believe in scrapping it altogether because they do help us in our anti-terrorism efforts. But however, I think when it comes to crimes against the Filipino people, it should be the Filipinos who should have jurisdiction over these cases. You have to remember now, Okinawa and in many bases in Japan, the Americans are leaving these areas talagang immediately, as soon as possible, because of cases of rape, cases of abuse, cases of their planes bombing the houses accidentally of Japanese individuals, Japanese nationals. So I don't want it to reach to that point wherein we have sour relations with the Americans in terms of training within our country. But I think we should review our visiting forces agreement in order to make it more advantageous to the Filipino people.
If you're elected, you'll push.
Yes, absolutely. If I had a chance in the Senate, I know it's a ticklish issue. They might not allow me to go back into the United States. But hey, what's important is we shouldn't have another problem like Nicole again. That will happen here in the country. And I hope and pray that what had happened to Nicole will send a lesson to the visiting forces in the Philippines that we are vigilant when it comes to the rights of our Filipinos.
What about the anti-terror bill? Like a lot of people are saying it could worsen. It could even probably add to more to the already 830 deaths that have been reported, abused and all that. What's your take?
Hindi naman. I think we're the only country, I think, in the ASEAN now does not have an anti-terrorism measure one way or the other. They call it different. They call it, Internal Affairs Act or something like that. But it's the same. It's the same banana. But I think with the help of the opposition in the Senate, they kind of came out with a human side to the anti-terror law. I mean, it's a 3-day detention time, and you have access to your lawyers. It can't be utilized during. It cannot be used during the election period. So you're pretty much safe if you're an opposition candidate. I think media men also are protected there. So we have the Senate opposition to thank there. We have, and I'll give credit where credit is due. Senator Nene Pimentel, the minority floor leader, did a good job in toning it down. I think it's not going to be a big problem for us. And I don't think it'll be an issue in the future. It's happening today. If you're talking about extrajudicial killings, it's happening today left and right. It could be done by politicians, it could be done by police, it could be done by army, it could be done by the New People's Army. What we want to happen is at least come up with a legal set of laws. Or a set of laws that are legal in terms of dealing with suspected terrorists. I'll be honest with you, I voted for the death penalty, not for the abolition, because this is exactly what I was worried about. I was worried about hotheads there taking the law into their own hands. And as soon as they abolished the death penalty, EU was saying, wow, fantastic, hurrah, there's no more death penalty. And then here we go. Now they're blaming us and they're killing us, the United Nations, the EU, for the extrajudicial killings. But if you think about it, many of those people who were maybe abused or who have no options left, they go by the barrel of the gun. I'm not saying I'm condoning it. I'm saying is that we should, PNP should put a stop to this. They should all be prosecuted and put to jail. But the thing is, that's what I was worried about. When you let the people down and you don't give them a legal remedy to pursue, then what happens is they take matters on their own hands. And if you look at the records, because of the non-implementation of the death penalty, and now the abolition of the death penalty, look at the number of extrajudicial killings. I think it's gone up on a higher note, on a higher percentage. So I'd like to say this to our men and women in the field, the uniformed men and women in the field. they must take an active step to stop and disarm all these private armies, all these armed groups, but not just politicians' private armies, if possible, also the ideological groups. I mean, we have problems with, in Mindanao, we have not only problems with the NPAs, we have problems also with the MNLF, with the MILF. I mean, just recently, our government panel was put on hold in a government camp in an MNLF camp in Sulu, because, and we couldn't do anything about it. There was like 1,000 armed men. I mean, these things have to stop. We want to be all equal in the eyes of the law and the eyes of the Philippine Constitution. So if I'm not allowed to bring a firearm, I don't even have a bodyguard. All those guys out there carrying cameras, I don't have an armed guy with me. And so it's so scary to know that there are people out there, hundreds of them with guns. And so I join all of you in condemning this. And we should stop this by disarming all of them if possible.
I guess that's it for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Nonoy. Madamo kinasalamat.
Sir, I'm Vita Fernandez. I cover Malacañang and Team Unity.
Yes, I see you all the time. But you're wearing the color of Edangara. You should wear green. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, sir, these are easy questions.
Yeah, no problem. I'm enjoying myself immensely. It's fun to be with the Inquirer.
Sir, gauging from your television campaign ads that we often saw on TV, can we assume that you're one of the richest candidates in town?
No, naman. It didn't cost me that much to produce the TV commercials, but it does entail cost, and I'm thankful for the donors. A lot of people have donated to my campaign. I guess, especially the businessmen. Believe it or not, they like me because I have no record of being a gang of one or a gang of five or that, or a tulisan in Congress. And so they're helping me out, and I've been very, very thankful of that. Although I have to thank the creative team behind that ad, of course Tito Camu for the song, and also Arnold Vigafria, who came up with the concept, and direct Joel Amangan. You know, the nice thing about all this is I believe I can cross over to the opposition side and the administration side, because I don't have a lot of baggage. I'm not the spokesperson of the president. I'm not, you know, like the spokesperson in Congress for the administration. All I did was work, and I think that paid off. People said before, no, you can't run for Senate because you were so quiet. But I guess all the work that I've done and actually come out with Republic Acts have paid off. And people like Joel Amangan, who directed, he's the multi-awarded, for those who are abroad listening, Joel Amangan is the most awarded director, local director in the Philippine cinema scene, and I'm so honored to be part of his list of candidates that he wants to support. And he did three of my commercials, four of my commercials, the biofuels, this one, the Boom Tarat Tarat, and two more that's about to come out. So I'm quite honored.
Did you get this all for free?
Oh, no. You have to pay. Of course. Although, discounted. Si Joel charged only 50% of his talent fee. I mean, he makes gazillions of amount of money from Smart and all the other ads on cellular and of course, from the movies. But in my case, he likes me, and I'm thankful. And I like him, too. He's a really nice guy. He's so smart and so intelligent. But, you know, he's critical of the administration. But he likes my program, so that's where we get together. When it comes to the advocacies, pareho kami. But of course, he just doesn't like the side I'm on. But I guess that's why we can cross over to the other side. On cost, boy, if we do the math, I'll tell you, the biggest cost in this campaign is the advertising side to it. It's paying TV and radio and print. PDI never gives me a discount. It's expensive to have a one-page ad in the Inquirer. But now, maybe since I'm your guest today, maybe I can bend some arms and get some discounts. But really, it's expensive. I mean, prime time, TV Patrol and 24 Horas is about, for a 30-seconder, it's no less than 220,000 pesos for 30 seconds. One time. That's just one time. And if you come out 5 times, it's $1 million over. So it's expensive. That's the biggest cost of the campaign. But if we don't do it, I can't win. Nobody knows Miguel Zubiri aside from Bukidnon, Mindanao. So it's a must. And therefore, you know, we have fundraising activities. We talk to friends who help us out. But anyway, in the end of the campaign, this will all be presented naman to COMELEC. It's allowable. We're allowed to spend 3 pesos per voter at 40 million voters. That's 120 million pesos. Of course, I don't have that kind of money. I just have enough for the advertising campaign. So I hope we make it. I hope it's enough.
And how much in your personal resources are you willing to spend doing?
About a third.
A third of,
a third of the total expenses. Okay. It's not, you know, I just got married and I wanted to go around the world with my wife and relax. And because we were relaxing, maybe we can have a baby. But right now, it's just an impossible dream for the next 3 months. But yes, it entails a lot of physical demands and financial demands on our part. But it's a risk we're willing to take. I mean, the country is, you should bet on this country. And I'm betting on this country. And I'm using my money to bet on this. And I'm betting on the people that they can filter out all the popularity from the credibility and credentials. So there I am. I am a candidate. And I hope that we win the bet and eventually be able to sit as a legislator in the Senate.
The president has called you a champion of the environment. What will be your stand on tapping nuclear power?
Yikes, I am completely against nuclear power.
But in the ASEAN, it's one of those things that they said they're open.
It's just that our country is not positioned in an area wherein it is conducive for nuclear technology, because we are in the Ring of Fire, and therefore we are close to volcanic eruptions, and we are close to tectonic movements underground, earthquakes. We are battered by typhoons, etc., etc. I am an advocate of renewable energy. Nuclear power, although renewable, is actually a pollutant, because you have the nuclear waste. And if you don't know where to put the nuclear waste, you're going to end up finding an island, one of the 7,100 islands, and dumping the nuclear waste there. And you have to remember that the nuclear waste is it takes thousands, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not a nuclear physicist, but it takes thousands upon thousands, hundreds of thousands of years before the radioactivity actually dies down. And remember the Russian spy who passed away, or former Russian spy? They gave him like a sand speck of plutonium, or I forget the name of the exact scientific name of that. But that was enough to destroy his insides and contaminate 3 other people in the same room. Imagine drums of nuclear waste, which can actually destroy hundreds of thousands of people through cancer. I would not recommend it in the Philippines. I would just say, go with the wind farms. You know, we will dot the whole eastern portion of the Philippines. Diyan po yung daanan ng bagyo eh. From Surigao all the way up to Lawag, Cagayan Valley, lagyan po natin ng wind farms yan, yung wind turbines. We have enough to energize the whole country. Sa Kongreso lang, lagay nga tayo ng wind farm dun. I'm sure you can get about 2 megawatts in Congress. Maybe 4 in the Senate. Just kidding. But yeah, it's definitely I'm against the use of nuclear technology because of the problem of nuclear waste.
Sir, the president also has been pitching for unity and in this election, saying not to go into too much politicking. But honestly, do you believe this is achievable after a very bitter election?
Yes, I think it can be done. It's now up to the people to allow it to happen. Many politicians, like ourselves, I mean that I'm one out of 12 people with diversified backgrounds, diversified political interests, and once were our mortal enemies. I mean, we have people like Tessie Aquino Ureta, Tito Soto and Edgaro were from the opposition, who we were up against in the last 2004 elections, us being in the side of the administration, them being in the side of FPJ. And the insults that were thrown on that election alone is enough to probably start a fist fight in a room if you try to recall all the things that were said against us. But you know what? I think the people are sick and tired of all this fighting. And that's why Team Unity, the message really is, magsama-sama na lang tayo, tama ng away, bahala na ng political background mo, basta pag magsama tayo, magtrabaho para sa kaunlaran ng ating bansa. That's the message of Team Unity. I gave this as an example earlier when a press con. My example is very simple. I liken our country to South Africa. During P.W. Botha's time, they were deep into apartheid. And it was all hate. It was a government of hate. They would whip the black people and the white people would be segregated. And what happened? P.W. Botha decided to come up with a democracy, a true democracy where people were actually elected into office and not by just the white minority. And who won? Nelson Mandela won the presidency of South Africa. The first thing he did was to invite the white minority to his government and say to his jailers, ito yung jailers niya and torturers, I forgive you. Let's move forward. Let's stop all this fighting and let's just help our people. And what has happened now? South Africa is the top economy in Africa. So we can do it, ladies and gentlemen. All we need is the political will and the understanding of the Filipino people that this is not politics. This is what we want to happen is we want to achieve lasting unity with our people. If not, oh my goodness, till the day I'll die, I'll still be fighting about Arab and I'll still be fighting about the problems of FPJ and the Marcos and all that. It's all over. I was a youth of EDSA One. I want this generation, this EDSA One youth now, to take over the reins, start something new, forget about the past, and it's our generation who should solve the problems of this generation. Let's not throw it onto the next generation. But in order to achieve this, we should stop saying that, oh, he was a Marcos man, oh, he was an FPJ man, oh, he's a GMA man. Tama na yun. Let's say, this guy's got a great idea, well, let's help him. Where was he from before? Doesn't matter. That's what I want to achieve. And that's why I work well, you know, in with the biofuels law. I worked well with Senator Nene Pimentel. I worked well with Ed Angara, who are the co-authors in the Senate. We never talked about politics. When we sat down, oh, itong article na to, like, how do we improve this? And that is what we want to happen sana in the next generation, in this next few years in legislation.
But somewhere along the way, aren't principles and your concept of being independent sacrifice?
Well, principles, for example, compromising principles, like say in the election now, to say sorry for something that you did in the past that you believed in, that's compromising principles. In other words, if I said all of a sudden, I'm sorry that I impeached President Estrada just to get the votes of the Estrada camp, then I think I should just cut. I think people should come behind me and kick me in the butt. Because that's really wrong. We fought for what we believed in at that time. But now let's let the wheels of justice take its course. Now it's up to them to prove that their actions at that time were appropriate or inappropriate. It has to be proven. But no, I will not sort of sell out my principles and my convictions on the stuff that I've done in the past. That's why it's very important in credibility issues that you stick to your guns and what you've done in the past. But you're willing to work with all these people to give a better life for the Filipino people. I mean, why not? I mean, I'm willing to work with Jinggoy. He's got a case, the Sandigan Bayan, but I'm willing to work with Senator Jinggoy in coming up with a better program for the youth in terms of sports. I'm willing to sit down with him to work for legislation for labor because he's the labor chairman. There's no problem with me working with them, but they have to answer their issues in court. But as a legislator, it shouldn't stop us from working together. So those are, I don't think it's compromising my principles if I sit down with JV or Jinggoy and work out some legislation to help our people. I don't think that should be compromising our, that I don't think it should be considered compromising my principles.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, my dear. Thanks.
Election 2007 podcast interviews.
I'm Erwin Oliva. I cover Comelec and the technology beat.
Hello, Erwin. Yeah. How are you?
My first question is on Garci, sir.
Aha! You asked me the question.
He's running now in Bukidnon.
Yes, so that's right.
What are your thoughts on...
Well, in a democracy, everybody can run. I mean, even Manny Pacquiao wants to run in General Santos. We can't stop him from running. But we are a candidate on that position already. And we're supporting our candidate, si Ben Pancrudo, for that position. I mean, I don't want to belittle the chances of Garci or anything like that. But I guess to answer your point squarely and truthfully, we have another candidate that we're supporting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sir. What are your thoughts on automating the elections?
I'm for it. As long as we can foolproof the system, guys. I'm really worried about having a computer programmer in Malacanang or somewhere in the armed region who's actually tampering with the results as we speak, while you're voting. Sana it should be tamper-proof. There should be some way. Even in the United States, the computerization of the elections, the people still have to go to the polling place and actually put holes on boxes and submit that ballot into the computer. It's just a quick counting machine. But if there's a question, they can always get back to those ballots and do the recount. Ayoko sana na pupunta tayo parang ATM. You just press your vote on a machine. And then you don't have any more the ability to review your vote, and it could be changed. So I'm all for it. I'm 100% for automation. I really want the quick counting machines in place. But just as long as there's a fail-safe system, wherein not one guy can actually, or several people can actually manipulate it through internet technology.
Yeah. Do you think it's gonna end cheating in elections?
If there's a fail-safe system, yes. I'll tell you how the cheating comes into place. Aside from the vote buying and everything that's done before the actual elections, it's actually the certificates of canvas that are being transferred from the municipality to the province, to the Manila. Something down the line disappears or it's erased and it's noticeable in the last canvassing. I've been a canvasser for 2 terms and each time we look at the COCs, you see several erasures. But it's not only from the admin side, it's also on the opposition side. So both opposition, they don't say anything. The administration people, they don't say anything. But it's really blatant there. You can actually erase it, snowpake it, and all that. So definitely, in a computerization process of counting, I think there'll be difficulties in actually tampering with all these numbers. Again, just as long as there's a fail-safe system wherein one guy with a computer program can change the outcome.
Sir, you mentioned about the difficulties or the expense in advertising or campaigning. The internet is now providing an alternative venue for you to reach out to more people. So my question is, how are you using technology or the internet to campaign right now?
I just signed last night actually the web page maker to come up with our internet page. So hopefully within the next week or so we'll be online, although I am active in MySpace and Friendster. But of course I hardly check it now because of so much work. I'm hardly home and I'm never really near a computer enough time to use it. But yes, very soon, ladies and gentlemen who are listening from abroad, we're coming up with a web page and you can access that. I still don't know what my web page name will be, but I guess it'll have something to do with Migzubiri, www.migzubiri. You just look for my name. We'll try to come up with as close as possible as it can be to my name. Definitely not a Boom Tarat. It will not be Boom Tarat. But you'll have access to the song. Because a lot of people from abroad, from the United States, they call me. Sabi niya, ano ba talaga yung kanta mong Boom Tarat? Hindi namin napapanood. Because apparently, TFC does not show the local commercials. You have to actually subscribe to TFC for your commercials. So hindi nila alam yung kanta Boom Tarat Tarat. So we might put it in the webpage, and of course we'll have our Republic Acts. We'll have all the details there, and definitely it's important because there's 1 million overseas voters registered under our different embassies around the world. The only way to get to them, it's physically impossible, ladies and gentlemen, to visit all of you out there. I mean, just to go to Hong Kong to the ASEAN areas alone is next to physically impossible to finish in a week's time. So we only have 90 days. The best way to do it is through the internet. My other friends beat me to it in the opposition. The other young guys, they've already gone via internet. But I think we'll follow suit in the next few days. There's still a lot of time. What's important is they hear your platforms and they see the things you've done in the past.
What about mobile texting? I think Prospero Pichai has been using texting to campaign.
It's a little expensive though. There's a cost component to it. There was a guy who offered me a program wherein if you give your leaflet and you say, register, it's free for them to register, 2366 or whatever, and then you register your name to want to be a volunteer for Mixability. It's for them, it's free. For us, we pay. So for every person who registers, it's 2 pesos and 50 centavos. So if there's a million people who register, I have to pay that guy 2.5 million. And then every time I want to text out every week something, it's a 1 peso text. So I have to. It's going to cost me 1 million pesos per week, which I think, to be honest with you, I want to utilize in our commercials and radio TV ads, newspaper ads. If you think about it, in the last survey of SWS and Pulse Asia, TV ads comprise about 86% of the public, of the voting public, awareness of the candidate. And so we're gonna just focus on that. It's expensive. Eh? Mahal yung, sana mas mura yung mayaman dito, yung Smart tsaka Globe. Eh. So they're the ones making a lot of money. And actually, ABS and GMA as well is making a lot of money. No wonder they're against charter change.
Sir, related to technology, sir, do you have any plans or what are your plans for developing this technology industry, ICT?
I'm heavy into one of my advocacies is research and development, R&D. Our country cannot boom as an tiger nation status or as a first world country if we do not invest in research and development. I come from a school which actually breeds a lot of scientists, which is UP Los Baños. Mike Defensor doesn't consider it part of the UP system, but I'm going to complain. Tomorrow I'll be in UPLB and I'll tell him he might get junked there. But many of the technologists or the agriculturists in Thailand and Malaysia and Africa, I've asked them, and this is so sad. They were being interviewed by so many people. How come you're growing, you have hydroponics, you're growing high value crops? How did you learn this? And they said, you know what? I learned it from UP Los Baños. And they bring it back to their country and they do a lot of research and development and they focus on that and they develop these technologies. You know, we have IRI, the International Rice and Research Institute, producing the best rice varieties that are being utilized to feed Africa and to feed Asia. And here we are in the Philippines still having problems on how we're going to feed the Filipinos with rice. I can't believe it. So we have to concentrate on our research and development and then from there implement it on a nationwide scale. You know, I was reading through a magazine, it's an aircraft magazine, and I saw that India was building aircraft and helicopters and rockets into space. India, where they have, I think, so many millions of poor people, but they're researching onto new technologies and new development, which is fueling their income. So for us to move forward, I think research and development is key to making us first world status. And I'm all for that. I'm all for the additional budget for the Department of Science and Technology, which is one of the most neglected, by the way. You know, pag-asa sometimes, as well, minsan we get mad at pag-asa na walang pag-asa. Talaga walang pag-asa tong pag-asa. Imagine they give you the typhoon warning the day of the typhoon that's arriving. You know, they call up all the radio stations. It should be at least 3 days. Sometimes when I fly, because I go to Bukidnon a lot, I have to check the international satellite maps to find out where the typhoon is actually going. And we're actually getting those pag-ask is actually getting the feedback from these internet sites as well. So we really have to put our money and a lot of work into research and development, and I'm all for that, or we can't move to tiger status.
That's on the science industry, sir. But what about on the technology, the IT part of
on the IT part, I think the Philippines has, in terms of the human resources for IT, I think we're one of the best in the region. The only unfortunate thing is we're exporting our people abroad more than we can actually keep them here, and we need them here. And so I think we have one of the best IT programs. We have a lot of schools now that are involved in IT. We have a lot of, it's like fish in water. Filipinos, you give them new technology, whether it's iPad, a computer, you give them a cell phone, it's like fish in water. I don't know why. We just love gadgets. You know, when MMS was so active here in the Philippines, and me, I'm 37 years old, I can text so fast. You know, I can text really quick and send it out. I can even text without looking like many of you. But my sister who lived in the States can't do it. I mean, she's like, oh, I'd rather call you. You know, naniinis na, tatawagan na lang kita. Parang huling-huli yung iba, you know, in Europe and the States. It's huling-huli sila sa galing ng Pilipino when it comes to IT. And I think we should utilize that. And I think even the best hackers, I think the Pentagon has hired a few Filipinos to teach them technologies and hacking into computer systems. So I think we should continue that and educate our youth into IT educational programs and courses. So it is something that we can strengthen. It is something that the Filipinos can utilize for future growth. And this is one of our biggest growth areas.
You mentioned about gadgets, sir. What kind of gadgets do you use, and do you play games? What websites do you visit? Can you give us an idea?
What websites? You want me to edit? <It's kidding>. Central. No, of course not. Hopefully, I'll be endorsed by Couples for Christ. No, actually, I like going, you know, I'm an environmentalist. I'm also into biodiversity protection. Believe it or not, my favorite websites to visit are actually conservation sites. In Costa Rica, conservation sites, movements, NGOs in Brazil. We talk about the protection of the Sphinx Macaw. Ever heard of the Sphinx Macaw? You can razzle-dazzle me with IT because I'm not an IT guy, but I can talk to you about different species of birds and animals and wildlife. And that's the websites that I like going into. Conservation sites, NGO conservation sites. The gadgets, I just have a simple phone. I still have an old Nokia phone that I have to actually, no exaggeration, and I'll show you later, I have to actually open it using a ball pen. Kasi nahulog yung rubber, ano niya, power on rubber switch. But I'm going to replace it very soon. I already have the set. It's just having to sit me down and changing and upgrading my phone. But I'm old school. I'm a farmer. I'm an environmentalist. I like things simple. I'd rather be out in the outdoors. To be honest with you, if I was not campaigning now, I have a park in Bukidnon, which is a wildlife rescue center. And I'd rather be there, you know, trying to mend the broken leg of a Philippine deer, or trying to help re-feather this burned up wing of a Philippine eagle or a Philippine Brahmini kite and letting him go to the wild. That's what I like doing. I like to keep things simple. But of course, technology makes our life a lot easier, and I thank technology for that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
That's the last of our questions, Mix, but we won't let you go just yet. I'm sure you're proud of your campaign song. I mean, you paid a lot for it. So we'd like to hear you sing
it. Oh, no, I didn't pay anything for that. But yeah,
could you play?
Yeah, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a first in podcasting history. Representative Juan Miguel Zubiri singing his campaign song. Boom-tarat-tarat. Hit it, Migs.
Okay, for those who haven't heard the jingle yet, it goes something like this. Boom-tarat-tarat. Boom-tarat-tarat. Zubiri, Zubiri. Boom, boom, boom. Amigo ng bayan, idol ng kabataan, Subiri, Subiri, boom, boom, boom. Eto na. Tama na. Actually, you can play it in my phone, but I think it sounds better when Lito Camu sings it. But okay, guys, I hope you're not throwing up out there. It was I was forced upon to do this. I only do this in the barangays, where we have an enthusiastic crowd. But thank you very much for having me here, Leo, and all of you guys. I had a great time.
Thank you, Migs.
Well, I guess that's a wrap, Migs. Thank you very much for gracing Inquire.net's election podcast, and the best of luck to your campaign.
Thank you so much, Leo, and it was really great interacting with all of you. It's a nice forum because you can actually ventilate and come out with all your issues and ideas without having to be caught into the time limits and be edited out in TV sometimes when they tape these things. I would just like to tell the people that really there are good people out there running. It's just you just have to filter all the garbage. You just have to filter all the fanfare and all the nice advertising and all the nice makeovers. You have to look at the issues and see, do they have a platform for the people? Do they have a plan of action for the people? And those plan of actions and platforms can be done by a group of think tanks. Also look if they've done it before, if they have credentials. And I think with our group and Team Unity, I think we have the most in terms of credentials, in terms of experience. And you know, I like saying this all the time. Whenever I part ways with students, I always ask them if they watch Batman Returns. And I'm a big fan of the Batman series. And there's one line there that I like in the movie. It's when the girlfriend of Batman asked Batman, "You know, Bruce, it's not who you are that matters. It is what you do that defines you." So in this world, it's not who you are that matters. It's what we do with our lives that will define us. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for listening to the Election 2007 podcast of Inquirer.net. No part of this podcast may be reproduced without the written consent of Inquirer.net. For more information, comments, or suggestions, you can email us at election2007podcast@inquirer.net. That's ELEKSYON2007podcast@inquirer.net. Produced by Creative Voices Productions. All rights reserved 2007.